Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, that guy over there, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've got to remind people, we're not doing a live show tonight. I am out in California and filming on a special that'll be airing later this year. Kind of like those paranormal caught on film, but it's not that. It's a one-off special about a very famous haunted location. Oh. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to that location, Tim. But I know that a couple of my buddies are going to be on this special as well, and one of them did get to go to this location. And I'm sure he'll talk about it as well. Jeff Belanger will be on it, so it's exciting. I'm glad we get to go out. I flew out on Wednesday. I'm filming all day Thursday, on my way home Friday. So I apologize, folks, that we're not going to be able to do a live show, but keep tuning in. I might try to swing in an extra bonus episode this weekend or something, if I feel so inclined. And I also want to thank everybody for the great feedback on last week's roundtable discussion. They seem to like when we're pulling people from different genres of the field and talking about the different cases and stories and how these all of this phenomena seems to knit together. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it. We're going to be doing some more. I'm also thinking about, and I'd like your guys' feedback on this, doing a panel discussion with a numerologist, astrologist, you know, a couple of the different facets of divination, just to try to get some information and see how these line up and what the numbers really tell us. We've done some interesting episodes in the past. And again, one of my favorites was when we did the numbers of serial killers or something it was called. Remember when we gave the numerologist and astrologist like 8 birthdays, and woven in there is mine and Tim's, but there's also Adolf Hitler and Mr. Rogers and a few other people. This person had no clue whose birthdays we were giving them to do a reading on, and they were eerily accurate for each person. So it was pretty amazing. So, you know, we might revisit and do something interesting with that again in the future. So we'll be looking at doing that as a live roundtable discussion if people are interested in that. But let's get started. You know, one of the more popular aspects, which has been a kind of a surprise to me, Tim, over the years, you know, with the popularity of ghost shows and UFOs and all these television programs, whenever we do a broadcast regarding Bigfoot and cryptids, it always seems to explode. I'm still kind of blown away by that.
Really?
That it's as popular. Not that I mean, I certainly am fascinated by it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like, to me, it just seems like that's the subset that would be the least dynamic to most people. And apparently to the listeners, it's one of the best. And we should just turn this into a Bigfoot show, Tim.
Well, you know, if you've spent any amount of time in the woods, you would think, you know, it's got to be the same stuff over and over again, but it's not. More time you spend out there, the more creepy it is. And I think the more unexplained stuff you run into, it really is fascinating.
Well, our guest today is Mike Dupler. He's a paranormal author and avid outdoorsman from Ohio. He's sought adventures across the United States and attends cryptozoology conferences across the country. He's here today to talk to us about his book, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike Dupler, thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
Now, I want to kind of give people a little bit of an idea of your genesis point. Why did you become fascinated with Bigfoot and cryptids? What was your, you know, germination of all of this?
I actually started out ghost hunting. I watched Ghost Hunters on TV, and my wife and I went to the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, on several overnight ghost hunts.
Oh, sure.
And went to Oregon with my daughter. We went to Portland to investigate the Shanghai tunnels.
Sure.
And we rented a cabin in a state forest that was halfway between Portland and the ocean. So one morning we got up, we decided we were going to go to spend the day at the ocean. And we were driving back roads heading towards the interstate. And in this field, I saw these trees that were stuck in the ground upside down. Now, I had seen a documentary that was Myths and Monsters of Alaska, and one of the segments was Prince of Wales Island. The inhabitants had a story where the hairy men would take blown down trees and stick them in the ground upside down as territory markers. Now, I can't say that what I saw was Bigfoot or Bigfoot related, but it was enough to trigger my curiosity on the subject, because I had actually witnessed something that I had seen in a Bigfoot documentary. So when I got back to Ohio, I rounded up my sister and we started doing some investigating.
And that was enough to kind of to tweak you into looking into cryptids. Do you believe prior to this, did you believe in Bigfoot, or was it always just kind of, oh, that's interesting, I'd like to know more? Where exactly did you fit in that scope?
I had seen the documentaries and that type of thing. I was just starting to get into my my ghost hunting, devoting time to that, and really didn't think much about cryptids until I saw those trees, which, you know, to me, that was something that I probably ought to look into.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting. So they take the blown over trees and turn them upside down, restake them in the ground, and that's kind of their markers?
That's the story that they got, yeah.
Okay.
And they actually showed those trees stuck in the ground in that documentary. And in my book, I have the picture of the trees that I saw in Oregon. And it's phenomenal. It's fantastic.
Now, getting into that, looking at something like this and seeing it for yourself, I mean, does it give you the true scope of, wow, this could be something, I don't want to say otherworldly, but something that, you know, just does not seem to belong and would not be human or man-made?
It's something that is not in human nature, that's for sure. If it's something along the line of a cryptid doing this, then we need to look into the causes and effects, and, you know, what does this mean? What's the meaning behind this? There, it has to mean something, or they wouldn't devote time and energy to do this.
Mm-hmm. I get you on that. But now, again, for something that wants to live kind of secretly and not be messed with, you know, why do you think they do something that's so dramatic like that, that would draw attention? Right? I mean, if you wanted to be stealthy, living in a cave, hiding in the tops of trees, maybe, but upturning trees, those bent over kind of hut things that they make, that to me just seems like it's counterintuitive to their kind of stealthy nature.
That is a good question. That when I returned to Ohio, I researched on what the hot spots would be in Ohio. And I actually learned that Ohio is number 5 in the country of states reporting Bigfoot sightings. They're right there behind the Pacific Northwest. So the hot spot in Ohio is a state park called Salt Fork State Park. It's in the eastern Ohio. My sister and I went there, and we didn't know what to do, and we parked a car and we walked a trail that goes around the lake, and we wandered into a ravine and we sat and listened for a while. We had no idea what we were doing. My sister looked down and said, "That looks like a track." And it looked like the perfect imprint of what I would think a Bigfoot track would look like, impressed in the leaf litter. And on a subsequent visit, we went to the same area and climbed the hill we were on, and we actually found one of these stick structures that Bigfoot is allegedly supposed to make. And over a period of time visiting this, I took a series of pictures over like a 2-3 month span of time, and I noticed that there had been subtle changes made to the structure. Parts were removed, parts were added, things were moved, that type of thing. And to me, that seemed like it was a form of communication. They were using this like a billboard, to where if another Bigfoot looked at this, they can ascertain a message from this, and changing the structure changes the message. Being so scattered, the thought is that they live in family units, but being scattered, if you had one of these in a central location, you could leave a message for another family unit living nearby, or even those passing through.
That's
interesting. They can derive meaning from this.
I'd never heard that concept before, that they were using it as a way to kind of telegraph to one another things. You know, we've always heard of wood knocks and the whoops and hollers that they claim on many of the different TV programs. But the concept of the structure itself being a message, you know, I would understand it maybe being like, you know, the Sasquatch Smith family built this, so they're denoting that that's their territory. Do you think that that's part of it, or do you feel it's more of a central hub of, you know, like a bulletin board at college? You go there to see what's going on and what's coming up in your area. Is that what the Sasquatch use it more for?
I think it's more elaborate than what we read into it, because the structure that we found, the one that changed over time, there were other structures or other things going on around it that changed also. Now, this could add to or detract from the meaning, or could just be something to draw their attention to the specific structure, something along those lines.
So then in looking at that, again, these are creatures with a lot of hair. They're, you know, big. In building a structure, you would think they would definitely leave some type of telltale DNA behind inadvertently, hair in the branches, things like that. Were you able to find anything in any of these constructs?
No, and I have looked. I haven't found any hair remains or physical evidence other than possible tracks around them.
All right, and with these tracks, I know that you've done some breakdowns on your Facebook pages and such regarding tracks and what that can mean. And I've heard so many different things, everything from that kind of break in the heel to the weight distribution points of a footprint. When you're looking at something, especially in a leaf bed, how do you discern that it's not just a slip pattern of somebody else? And in the mud, right? Obviously, these are wet, damp areas. That's why they're conducive for a footprint. But if somebody's heavy enough and slides their foot, I know I do that. You can see my footprints in with my shoes on, of course, in the snow. They always look like they're maybe a size 13 by the time I'm done taking the step.
Well, looking at the footprints, the one that we found in the leaf litter was a perfect impression, as if somebody stamped it. If you get what I mean, it was just a perfect impression for the something of substantial weight pressed down on this leaf litter enough to where it made a track. Now, we were off trail. We wandered into a ravine. So if anybody was going to hoax this, there would be virtually no chance of anybody coming in there and actually seeing this to report it, if, you know, someone was just playing a joke or something along those lines. But the tracks that I have found, the tracks that I have cast, I've actually cast 8 prints. Most of them were single prints. One that I cast was probably 6 inches deep in mud, to where this creature stepped down, made the one track in a low wet area, and then backed up and walked around it, because I found another partial track in another location. Like, it didn't like the mud between his toes or something along those lines. But as far as a slide or something, these were pretty much intact tracks where you could tell it was something big that actually made this.
Is there anything besides the footprint? And again, it always seems strange to me that there's only just one foot that they find cast. Why do we not often see the pair? Do you know much on why that would be, or you know, is it just there was just one patch of mud that had stepped in that caught that that footprint inadvertently, or what?
Well, the time I spent in the woods and the tracks that I've found, if you follow a game trail, like a deer trail or that type of thing in the woods, you can tell a well-used trail just by looking at it. And I don't think that Bigfoot travels these trails. They travel along the trails, because if you travel in the trail, much of what I found is that they would leave a scent signature. So they don't follow the trails leaving their scent. They walk along the trails. That way their scent is more out of the way or less detectable. And if you find a track on a trail, they are actually crossing the trail, heading in another direction.
So again, it's always instead of following the normal beaten path of the other animals, it is trying to keep a little bit more of a stealthy pathway, but it might cross those paths from time to time. So that's why you get a shorter impression mark.
Right. The last track that I cast was in a game trail by a creek, but I can tell by the direction of the track that it was crossing the trail as far as opposed to walking the trail.
Now, when you're doing that, do you ever see patterns of more than one Bigfoot, as though there may have been a family package unit, something that's crossed that area? Or does it always seem to be a sentry version of this, just one lone Bigfoot?
It seems to be just a singular creature in the area that I'm investigating. Not saying that there is only one, but it seems like the evidence I found is for a singular creature.
Okay. So yeah, just a one-off. That's really bizarre. I guess it is and it isn't, right? If they really do kind of work like a military unit where you've got one sentry who does the outlooking and whoops and knocks to back the tribe, their pack, whatever you want to call them, back when people might be in the area, it would make sense that they've got one that kind of does the guard post duty, right? And kind of checks out or goes out to do the hunting and gathering and brings back.
Well, I kind of have a theory that usually when there's a sighting of a Bigfoot, it's usually one as opposed to a family group or whatever. And when there's a sighting, if it's a reported sighting, then what does everybody do? They go to that area to look for it. And I believe that Bigfoot knows enough about us to have us pattern to where they will intentionally show themselves in an area to keep us out of a different area that they want secured, kind of drawing us away from their habitat or their family group or whatever. And it could be the same way with the evidence that we're finding, the single footprint, that type of thing. They could very well be intentional to draw us off their track.
Gotcha. Wow. All right. Well, now all this research, how long have you been actively pursuing Bigfoot?
Probably 10 or 12 years.
10 or 12 years. And have you ever come into contact with one?
I've had encounters several times. Yeah.
Okay. And what are those like? Talk us through what some of these encounters have been. I mean, and when I say encounters, meaning, have you physically seen the beast?
I have seen one. Now, when I was investigating Salt Fork with my sister, we were walking a game trail in a Bigfoot active area where we found structures and tracks before. And as we was walking along, this was in March, and we heard a turkey yelping not far from us, but in the brush, we couldn't see it. And as we walked along, it seemed like this turkey was walking the same direction we were. And as we walked along and this turkey was open, we heard a growl. I mean, a growl that sounded like a mix between a freight train and Godzilla. This thing growled deeply, and it was fairly close. And I can tell you right here that there's nothing in the Ohio woods that would make that sound. So we kept walking a little ways, and we saw where the turkey came out of the brush into an opening. So we turned around and walked back to the car. But I believe that Bigfoot could have been warning us that we could be possibly interrupting its hunt.
Oh, okay.
That was the first encounter we had.
And now,
the one that I saw.
Yeah, go ahead.
The one that I saw, I'm originally from Ohio, but I retired to Tennessee. I saw this in Tennessee. It was last August. I was walking an old logging road, and I came to a high point on the road, and I saw something large and dark move behind a tree. And in front of me, about 100 yards in front of me, was a new structure that wasn't there the last time I was in these woods. So I was walking towards the structure. I wanted to get a picture of it. And I heard screams like something from a horror movie. I mean, loud screams. There were two of them. So I knew that there were Bigfoot in that area. And what I had just seen was a Bigfoot walking or hiding behind a tree. That was cool.
Right, I would guess. Do you ever feel intimidated or possibly in danger when you're in this area and realize that you're within a very close radius to one of these creatures?
No, never have. Which is strange. I was telling you about the first time we were growled at. We were there in the same area the next year, and I found a sapling that had been pulled from the ground and thrown on the trail. So I was looking at this, taking a picture of it, and we heard the same type of growl that we heard in the turkey incident, probably about 30 yards away from us. The same type of low, guttural, loud, strange growl. And my sister was there. And after this, I asked my sister, I said, "You heard that, right?" She said, "Yeah, I heard that." I said, "Were you afraid?" She said, "No, I wasn't afraid." And it was strange that it didn't strike any fear in us. It was, and I think part of the reason was it wasn't conceived as a threat. It was conceived as a warning. If you don't know what I'm talking about.
Sure. I'm married. I know what the difference is between my wife warning me and my wife being in a rage mode. I get that. But when you're, you know, I mean, that's kind of always what's been unnerving for me is if you get out there, I know how animals get when you come between them and their family, or you get too close to their natural base. You know, I'm just worried that if you're out there and stumble in the wrong area near one of their children or way too uncomfortably close to their home, could it become more violent? We've heard stories throughout the years of you know, more violent interactions with these beings. What do you make of cases like that?
Generally, human encounters with these creatures have been pretty much benign. There have been occasions of rock throwing, and like I said, like what we've encountered, it was the growling. And I think the worst would be like a charge, like a gorilla would make a charge at you, but not actually attack you, that type of thing. From what I understand, the aggressive encounters are very rare with this creature. like I said, they might be giving you a warning, growling, throwing rocks or that type of thing. But to be actually physically harmed by these, it's pretty much unheard of.
All right. Well, it's interesting to hear that aspect of this because, again, you know, we've covered some of these stories where they believe there has been some more aggressive activity. But again, is that because there are different variations of these creatures in different areas around the United States and some are just more aggressive?
Well, they've been around long enough to have developed regional traits. I have heard that maybe in the South, the skunk ape could be a little bit more aggressive than what they call the Ohio Grassman or something along those lines. I guess it depends on the circumstances that they exist in, if they're encroached upon or if there's a lot of human activity that's starting to develop, that might create a situation to where they do become more aggressive to defend their territories.
All right. Now, you've talked about a few of the encounters you've had. You said you've had multiple. What other stories have you, you know, particularly been in or situations have you particularly been in with these creatures?
Once again, at Salt Fork with my sister again. We all know why I take my sisters because I can run faster than her. But
right.
But we went to the original location again. And instead of climbing the hill where that structure was that I took pictures of over time, we walked a dry creek bed back probably half mile or so because I knew there were some caves back there. We wanted to check these out. But the terrain got rough, and I didn't want to take my sister back there. So I took my point-and-shoot camera and just took random pictures into the woods. During this time, we heard a tree knock in the distance ahead of us. It was just a single knock, which I've heard before, and the tree knocks that I've heard have basically all been single knocks, which I interpret as being a warning that humans are in the area. But I took random pictures into the woods, and I have these pictures in my book. There were four Bigfoots watching us in the woods. There were three hunkered down in the brush and one in a tree. When I looked at the pictures on my computer, they were just like black dots in the distance. And I enhanced them, and you can actually see that these are Bigfoot hunkered down watching us. So that was an occasion. I told my sister this later.
I like how casual you are about it.
But I told my sister, I said, you know, that time we went back while they creeped back? She said, yeah. I said, well, there were four Bigfoots watching us. And I gave her copies of the pictures. She was impressed. But those pictures are in my book also.
And how long do you specifically stay in these areas? You know, I mean, if you know of a hotbed, why are we not getting better evidential proof of where these creatures live and how they live and, you know, proof that they exist for, you know, more people to be able to see and experience for themselves?
Well, proof is there. Like I said, I've cast 8 footprint casts. I have 1 handprint. There are structures all over in Bigfoot active areas. The structures are there. Once you determine that they're not natural or not hoaxed, the structures are there. That's evidence right there. Along with the footprints and the handprint and the structures and possible sightings, you know, what more could you ask for besides a body or whatever?
Well, that's what I'm asking for. We want the body. What do you think it's going to take to actually get to that point? Obviously, it's been so long. We haven't uncovered anything yet. Do you think that they clean up their own quickly when one does fall so that there is no evidence, or do you think that they just leave it to the wilds and the coyotes and wolves and everything else do their part to, you know, kind of eradicate the area of these beings?
Well, I truly believe that they're very intelligent and they are masters of their domain as much as we are masters of ours.
Okay.
But I believe that they bury their dead. I don't believe that they bury them like we do. I don't believe they dig a hole and cover them up. I believe they bury them in mounds. They mound dirt over the body. And it's very possible that that's how the Native Americans began using burial mounds, was watching the Sasquatch do this, which is, I think that would be very interesting.
Right. Holy cow. Do you believe this is some kind of missing link to humanity itself, or, you know, what exactly are we looking at when it comes to these creatures?
I don't have, from what I have learned in my investigations, I don't believe this is a human hybrid. I don't believe this is part of the human lineage. I believe this is from the gorilla side of the tree. For the simple fact that, like the pictures that I took, these look just like a gorilla. Exactly. And look at the Patterson and Gimlin film of Patty walking down the sandbar. This looks exactly like a gorilla. Now, if you look at human prehistory, even pre-humans along the human lineage made tools and used fire. Bigfoot is not known to do either. They'll throw rocks and that type of thing, use logs for tree knocks, but to actually chip a rock to make a tool, there's absolutely no evidence for that. So there's no human or pre-human activity associated with Bigfoot to bring him into the human family.
All right, we need to take a quick break. Again, we have a link to the book on today's program, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. We'll be back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio. Today, we are on the trail of Bigfoot, tracking the enigmatic giants of the forest. Mike Dubler, our guest. We have a link up for his book and his social media on today's show guide. Make sure you check that out. Now, Mike, in all the research you've done and investigations, what have been some of the most surprising elements and aspects of this creature that you've uncovered?
I would say it would be the audio encounters, being growled at, being screamed at, the wood knocks. I've actually heard them whoop, do a whooping sound, because to me, a track, if you find a track, you can say, well, that's a Bigfoot track, but it could, there's a small chance that it could be something else. Maybe somebody pulled a rock up or something along those lines. But to actually hear them, you know that they're in the woods with you. You know that they exist, which to me, that's what it's all about.
Has there been any part of this that has made you question, any aspect of the Bigfoot craze and the popularity of this? Because I've got to guess, even though you're constantly out there researching it, what some people have put forth as evidence, others completely disbelieve. Has there been aspects that you've thought going into this would be elements of proof, only to realize, no, this has nothing to do with Bigfoot, and vice versa?
There's a lot of beliefs out there, which I believe are unfounded. It's more of being popular or a popular notion or something in the supernatural nature or religious aspects of it. To me, the Native American legends of this being a spiritual animal or a god type or protector of the woods or something like that could go along with the how they're so elusive. A lot of people think that they're interdimensional or they can cloak is because they can actually hide themselves in an instant, and you think they've disappeared or something along those lines. If it disappears, they think, well, it stepped into another dimension or it's cloaking or something like that. But like I said, the Native Americans, when they encounter that, they say, well, this has to be spiritual because we can't do that. We can't do that because we don't know how. We can't do that because we're not as in tuned to their environment as they are. So the belief, there's a lot of beliefs out there, and a lot of people believe this without confirmation, without going into the woods themselves and say, well, this didn't happen, or that can't happen, or this happened, and I know why. It's just they believe it just to believe it because somebody told them that.
Now, you've been to many different locations to investigate these claims. Where do you feel is the biggest hotbed of paranormal activity with Bigfoot encounters?
I would say in Ohio, it was Salt Fork State Park, which is reputed to be the hotspot location in the state. I have been to other areas of the state where I have found Bigfoot evidence, but not as much as I have found at Salt Fork, even though there's a lot of people out there. You have to take into consideration that there are other people out there investigating, and there's people out there hoaxing stuff because there are so many people out there investigating. So that's why you have to be careful when you're looking at tracks or if you're looking at stick structures to make sure that this wasn't something that was hoaxed, something that wasn't natural. When I was in Salt Fork, I found arched pine trees, probably from snow load. But over time, the tops of the pine trees had been woven together without the use of ropes or any binding. And it was like 12 feet off the ground. So this was something that humans absolutely, I don't believe they could do. I have this picture in my book, and it's amazing the way these trees were woven together. And I don't believe this is a way they communicated. I believe this could actually be an artistic expression.
Okay, so you believe that's just, again, nothing specifically warning or messaging, but just something they're doing. That's their hobby. That's their crocheting and needlepoint. They just twist these trees and create these structures?
These structures, when you find these structures, you don't find one. You find a few. You find several.
Sure.
It's like, we're going to leave a message, but we're going to pretty it up a bit, you know, okay. That type of thing.
All right. And now,
yeah, the structures. And, okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm good.
Well, I was just going to say, well, you know, when you start coming upon these, have you ever left anything at these structures to, you know, as either an offering or a way to entice them to become more familiar with you?
They call that gifting,
right?
A lot of people do this. I don't do it because, well, for one thing, when I go to the woods, I don't tree knock, I don't whoop, and I don't gift because I don't know the context of this. I could be out there whooping. I could be giving them a mating call or something. You never know. But I don't know the context.
What's the matter? You're not looking for a little love in all the wrong places?
I don't want to be a forest bride, if you get my drift.
I got but, forest bride. That's going to be Tim's new nickname, Tim the Forest Bride Dennis. Tim, that's your wrestling name, I think, going forward.
I was going to say, I'm already putting it down in several chat rooms right now as we speak. Yeah.
Tim the Forest Bride. Yeah. That is awesome. Yeah. Well, obviously, that's something you got to be careful of. And I've often wondered, you don't know what replicating these sounds means, you know, playing back the whoops. Has that been something that you've considered doing, or do you feel it's in kind of the same genre? You know, because if you're hearing the whoops, and the whoops are really kind of warning other creatures from the area, if you're playing them back, you're just helping them rebroadcast that emergency alert, aren't you?
Exactly. That's like tree knocking. The tree knocks that I've heard, like I said, have just been a single knock. And to me, it seems like that is a warning to others that humans are in the area, because you hear a tree knock when you go into an area, not if you've been in there for a while. So if I made a tree knock, I'm just telling them I'm there. I'm just announcing myself.
Right. Letting them know that you're among them and kind of probably spooking them off. Do you do anything to coat your human scent? Do you spray yourself with animal pheromones or scent to try to hide that? Or again, then do you have to be careful that you don't end up, you know, attracting attention from the wrong animals?
No, I don't do that. When I go into a Bigfoot active area, be it in Tennessee or in Ohio, Suffolk or whatever, no, I don't try to hide myself. I'd be quiet. I go in quietly and I go in respectfully, and I try to stay towards the trails, because to me, I'm on the human side. The deep woods are their side. I don't want to encroach on them, but I don't want to hide myself from them. So if I go in, they are aware that I'm there. If they want to react, then that's fine.
All right. Now, in going in and looking for those creatures, have you ever uncovered any other strange phenomena that you don't think is Bigfoot, but is also not a creature you are familiar with?
Not that I've ever encountered, no. Not as of yet.
Okay, well,
but being in a Bigfoot active woods, and
yeah, I was just going to say, in some of these areas, it seems like the dog man and other creatures are equally active.
Well, the way I consider it, if you go into a Bigfoot active woods, the Bigfoots usually are top of the food chain. They are the dominant species in that area. I've heard where dog man coexist with Bigfoot, but I've never seen evidence of that. If you look at a map of Bigfoot active areas and you look at a map of active black bear territories, they kind of overlap, so they kind of coexist with black bears or that type of thing. But I don't think a dog man, they would let a dog man too far in to their territory to encroach on them or to try to dominate the food supply or that type of thing.
But if it's telling you that it overlaps with black bear population, then should we be looking at more of the fact that we may just be running into black bear, you know, or misidentified black bear, maybe with mange or other diseases?
I think that the reason there's an overlap is because they pretty much forage for the same type of nutrients. The Bigfoot that I saw was not a black bear. The tracks that I have cast have not been black bear. In the state of Ohio, there are very, very few bears. They considered only a handful of bears in the state of Ohio. So encounters with bears are very rare in Ohio, but encounters with Bigfoots are more common.
Right, which is what would make a skeptic believe that then, you know, the Sasquatch population overrides the bear population. That makes it to me sound almost more compelling that it's misidentified. I know in your case, you know what you saw, but you know, you can admit that a lot of people that are not avid outdoors people may easily mistake creatures for something else.
Oh, absolutely. There could be a lot of misidentifications, especially if black bears are on their hind legs standing up. They do that to scratch the backs or whatever. They don't actually walk that way, but they'll stand up and possibly just to see a longer distance or that type of thing. And sure, people could misinterpret that as being a Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that, you know, there may be more of that going on. But, you know, what about, and do you look into the, since you are a paranormal investigator as well, do you look into the crossover with other elements of UFOs sighted in those areas as well? And what have you found?
From what I've seen, from the documentaries that they've shown, the connection between Bigfoot and UFOs, usually, they indicate the points of light, the light orbs that they associate with UFOs and Bigfoot, or just UFOs by themselves. Have you ever heard of the Brown Mountain Light?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
I have seen the Brown Mountain Light, and I saw them in the woods, and if you look at the light orbs on these documentaries, that's exactly what the Brown Mountain Lights look like. And to me, these lights are naturally occurring, but of unknown origin. So they could be seeing the same type of thing and associating it with Bigfoot because it just happens to be in a Bigfoot area. I don't believe that Bigfoot come from UFOs. For one thing, I can't picture a Bigfoot driving a UFO light years across the galaxy just to come here and throw rocks at us.
Okay. Right. Well, and that's a good point, but I still, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, again, with the concept that things are more interdimensional than they are physically existing in our plane. You know, if we're noticing that there are heavy ley line areas where Bigfoot sightings and UFO sightings are taking place, is that showing that there's a more interesting underlying phenomena that's taking place? Could there be portals that both aliens and Bigfoot are using to, you know, be here one second, gone the next?
The concept of Bigfoot being interdimensional, I don't personally believe that. I can't say 100% that they're not, because without identifying this creature, what it is, and assigning proper attributes, you can't say for sure that it's not. But to me, indications are that it's not. Bigfoot has been around for a very long time. Leif Erikson, the Viking explorer, had a Bigfoot type encounter in the year 986, which is well over 1,000 years ago. So they've been around here a very long time. And you have to consider, okay, was Gigantopithecus interdimensional? They found archaeological remains of this creature. Was that interdimensional? Is a Yowie interdimensional? A Yeren? A Yeti? That type of thing? Are all these interdimensional? Are they all interconnected? To me, there's no correlation to indicate that this is the case.
All right. Do you believe then we are going to find definitive proof that will be enough to, you know, get the scientific community on board with this and get skeptics out there more, you know, on board with this creature existing? Or Do you think that it's been elusive all these years, even in the dynamic way we're pushing forward and encroaching on their space? They'll continue to be elusive, or are we going to eventually pinch them out where there's no way they can continue to hide?
Well, as we encroach, they just go deeper in the woods. Like with logging. I'm in Tennessee now. There's a lot of logging here. They've logged close to a Bigfoot active area that I investigate. And to me, it seems like they move to areas where they can't log. Logging needs pretty much flat terrain for the equipment and trucks in and out. They just move to the slopes where they can't log. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of wooded acres here in the mountainous areas where they can't log. So they have a pretty good environment there to exist in. But it's going to take a body. It's going to take a verified, something that they can't debunk. It's going to have to be solid 100% proof before science will accept this.
Right. That's what I'm saying is, how far away do you think we are from getting to that point? Or do you think that they'll always just continue to be the elusive subspecies that nobody can definitively prove exists?
One of these days, the truth will be known. The Bigfoot investigators that I know, that I'm in contact with, and that I interact with, pretty much the feeling is we're no kill. Okay. We'll find tracks, we'll find this and that, whatever, but we're not going to go out and shoot one just to prove that it exists. There's a group that has a TV show, Killing Bigfoot. Their goal is to shoot one and bring it into the public eye to confirm to science that this exists, but they haven't been able to do it yet.
Right. And I don't know that they ever will. And if they do end up killing one, what kind of, uprising is it going to be? You shoot a Bigfoot, kill one. I don't know if people are going to wait for the season finale to see that story, because obviously it's going to leak to the media quite a bit before that actually takes place, before the episode airs. In those instances, that makes it even more compelling to consider. Now, what are some of the more, chilling or strange encounters that have been reported to you?
There's one encounter that I had. Okay, this was in the original, this was on the original hill that we first went to. I went there to do some investigating, and the shutter motor on my point-and-shoot camera went out. So I was using my night vision camera in a daytime mode, but it still picks up other spectrum of the light. And I was taking pictures with that, and I just took random pictures into the woods. And on one of the pictures, I see what looks like a Bigfoot face impressed into the environment. Now, this is a Bigfoot active area.
Right.
Here I catch this strange Bigfoot-like mystical face in the environment. Now, if it was Elvis or Wonder Woman or whatever, I would just, dismiss it. But it's not. And this picture is in my book. And when I looked at this, what came to mind was this could possibly be a form of projecting themselves into the environment, or remote viewing, that's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
Because apparently the CIA and other espionage organizations actively use remote viewing to spy on each other. That is almost an established fact that this exists, and they do that. So if we can do this, then why isn't this a primate thing for them to do? possibly they had developed this remote viewing ability to keep so elusive. That's one of the ways that they do stay so elusive, is they use this as a self-defense mechanism. To me, that raised the possibility.
All right, I get that aspect of it, but again, it just seems like we're at a place now technologically by doing, you know, thermal scans with drones, that we would start to find more conclusive proof of these beings existing. And, you know, I know that there's many different paranormal Bigfoot shows that have been on. Some have been obviously for entertainment value. Some are trying to take it a little bit more seriously, using more of a scientific approach and look at what the phenomena is. But it just seems strange to me that, you know, there hasn't been something much more, you know, aside from the Patterson-Gimlin film, what other piece of footage exists that's really that compelling that hasn't been debunked already?
There's a couple, there's a few films out there or film clips that look very authentic. But even if you use those, even if you use thermal imaging camera, this, that, whatever technology you want to use to capture evidence of this, science is still not going to recognize it, because they say, well, that could be a man in the sea, that could be a bear, this could be this, it could be that, or whatever. All the thermal images in the world is not going to convince science that this is real until you actually throw a body on the slab.
Right.
Because this can be faked so easily, even if it's authentic, they're reluctant to accept it. And I think that's where we're at with technology. Even though technology is exploding, they're using more and more of it.
Well, then let me ask you this.
That this is believable.
Well, what is keeping your drive going and motivation? You've seen them, you've had experiences, you've been near them, you've heard them. Why continue? What more is there to prove to yourself?
I am fascinated with the structure. Now, I don't know of many who look at this the way that I do, because they say, well, here's the structure, whatever. They're more geared towards finding the tracks, the sightings, this and that, whatever. But to me, the structures define what these creatures are. If they're using them to communicate, that shows a level of intelligence. If they're using them possibly to honor a nature deity, you know, that's an aspect of it. If they're using these as an artistic expression, that's a different aspect of it. That's my main reason, is to look at these, to see, try to determine patterns. Are they aligned to north-south? Are they aligned to celestial bodies? There's so much to be derived from the structure. That's what's keeping me going on.
Very cool. Well, we wish you a lot of success with your continued journey. And please, if you uncover more and unusual aspects of this, or you find the definitive proof that you're able to share with us, we'd love to hear from you again, Mike.
Sure. I'd love to share it with you.
Excellent. Well, check out the book, folks, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike Dupler, our guest. We have a link up for Mike and for his book right on today's program guide. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.